About 200 public school districts in Ohio are suing the state, arguing the state's EdChoice voucher program is unconstitutional. Late last month, a judge ruled in their favor, but the fight is far from over. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the battle over school choice and state education funding are Cleveland Heights, University Heights Board of Education member Dan Heinz. Welcome to the program, Dan.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And School Choice Ohio President Yitz Frank. Thanks for being here, Yitz.
Thanks for having me.
Dan, your group's lawsuit argues Ohio's EdChoice voucher program is unconstitutional. Briefly explain why.
Well, there's five reasons. We developed through extensive research, a couple of different legal teams researched the EdChoice voucher system and identified five different ways that it violates the state's constitution. We're very lucky in Ohio because the constitution, in very plain language, describes the funding that should happen for Ohio's school children and actually funding that cannot happen. And so that's what we're in court battling out. And we are thrilled with Judge Page's decision that agreed with us flat out on three of them, left one to a trial court to determine, and another one we will pick up again in appeal.
Dan just mentioned this Franklin County judge who ruled siding with Dan's group. What do you think that judge got wrong in that ruling?
Well, you know, I don't want to bore all your listeners with my non-lawyerly legal opinion, but I think that there's been a lot of precedent in Ohio, including at the Ohio Supreme Court, that says that school choice programs are constitutional. And we believe that ultimately the Ohio Supreme Court will agree with us.
Hmm. Eric, how much money is the state spending on its school voucher program now, and how many students are using it?
So today, I believe there's about 160,000 students using one of the five state scholarship programs. And I believe that adds up to around $1 billion out of a total spend in Ohio of $26 billion. So it's a pretty sizable program, but it's also educating almost 11% of the students in Ohio.
And Dan, Ohio lawmakers have been expanding that system, the voucher program, for years. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, we hear the words school choice a lot. The problem is that it's a fairy tale. Legally, it is a fairy tale. It exists nowhere in the state constitution. And so what has happened is we've had the most gerrymandered General Assembly in the country circumvent the state constitution by creating this unconstitutional system. And as a result, we're having public school districts around the state. We've now got about a third. We've gone up more than 50 this month. This year. And we're taking it to the Supreme Court in order to reel in the really out of line legislature.
Hmm. Eric, you were just talking about the number of students who are involved in these scholarship programs, the amount of money. Studies have pointed to this voucher money going to children who already attend private schools, who've never attended public schools. Eric, why do you think that is? I'm sorry, Yitz, I should have said.
No worries. So I think that the legislature has expanded this program over time. So I think there's some truth that the most recent expansion 2 years ago did not exclude students that were currently already in a private school from participating. So during that expansion, there was a pretty significant percentage of those students who were already there. But it's also true that a very significant percentage of the total number of scholarship students that are currently there were not existing private school students. They only were able to attend those schools because the state made this scholarship available to their parents. And also, I'd also point out that in the past couple of years, there's been a pretty significant drop in traditional public school enrollment for a lot of different reasons. But there's also been almost a 15% increase in enrollment in non-public schools in the past couple of years. So I would question some of the sources behind the studies that you were mentioning.
What do you think, Dan?
You know, I'm always going to circle back to the state constitution because that's what this is all really about. And, you know, we can wish and hope and believe that school choice exists and that it is okay for Ohio students. But wishes don't make things real. If they did, I'd be 3 inches taller and a lot better looking. And so we come back to the, you know, the words on the page of the state constitution. And I'd like to read 26 of those words. Quote, "No religious or other sect or sects shall ever have any exclusive right to or control of any part of the school funds of this state," end quote. So when we've got 90% of roughly $1 billion a year going to religious schools, it's going to be a hard lift to get that through the state Supreme Court.
How do you respond to that, Yitz?
Yeah, so I don't have the language verbatim, but the Ohio Supreme Court, and in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled on a very similar, on this very provision in the past. And what they have said is when the state gives scholarships to parents and the parents do their own choices based on what's the best interest for their children, choose to use that scholarship to pay their tuition, it does comply with the Constitution. And I think it's worked out pretty well.
So the interesting thing is that when we talk about this, the other side often pivots to the federal Constitution and to the federal Supreme Court. And it is very intentional on our part that we did not pursue a federal lawsuit challenging this, because he is correct that that in U.S. Supreme Court, there was a case that said that it is okay. Our claims have nothing to do with the U.S. Constitution or the U.S. courts. Our case is entirely focused on the state of Ohio's constitution.
We're talking today with a supporter and an opponent of Ohio's private school voucher program, and we're talking about a legal challenge to the program. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So Dan Yitz was saying that roughly $1 billion is being spent on these private school vouchers. Is your group arguing that that money would otherwise be going to public schools if it weren't going into these scholarship programs?
Well, what we know for sure is that every dollar that goes to a voucher comes directly out of the line item that funds Ohio's public schools. Now, we cannot predict, no one can predict, what the Ohio legislature will do once they realize they can no longer send that money to private schools. Will they maintain the full allocation and send it out to Ohio's public schools? I would love that. We don't know that for sure. But what we know is that $1 billion a year of Ohio taxpayer money is being sent unconstitutionally to institutions that have no right to it. And so even if the state's public schools don't win that money, Ohio's taxpayers win.
It's, what do you think about that? If the state were not spending that $1 billion on vouchers, do you presume that money would go to public schools?
I think the legislature spends money on all kinds of different things. But so here's what we do know, though. The money that is available to fund education in our state, it is appropriate in a line item, like Dan referenced, but the way it's distributed is based on the school funding formula, which is written into state law. That's what drives the dollar. So if this program were, as Judge Page actually did rule it unconstitutional, were to go away, not from a legal perspective, not one penny more would make it into the traditional public school system. It would obviously create a lot of chaos, because all of a sudden there will be tens and tens of thousands of students that would all of a sudden no longer be able to go to the school that they chose and ultimately would need to re-enter the public system somewhere, somehow. And furthermore, I think the legislature has all kinds of cool things that they like to do. Some I agree with, some that I don't. I'm pretty confident if you handed them an additional $1 billion, they'd find lots of things that we might disagree with how to spend it. And I think they've proven that before. I can also point you to comments that have been made publicly that those dollars would not likely be put into the school funding formula, because they are, in their, at least in their point of view, already fully funding it in the state budget. The other thing is, it's very important to remember that while we are spending a significant amount of resources on school choice programs to educate 150,000 students, It is also true that the legislature has increased public school funding significantly past the rate of inflation, while at the same time growing the school choice programs. And so they've sort of demonstrated they can walk and chew gum at the same time. And it's one of the reasons why we think ultimately we will prevail here.
I agree with almost everything that Yitz just said, except it's important for us to remember that, you know, just when vouchers do leave the landscape, it doesn't mean that those students are going to be, you know, thrown out of their private schools. I will remind Ohioans that private schools existed for a century before a single public dollar was sent to them through vouchers. Vouchers have only been around for about the past 25 years, and hundreds of thousands of Ohioans attended fantastic private schools without their neighbors having to pay for it.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Cleta. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Well, I've always been curious about how hiring practices are regarding for this. When I had teaching credentials, I taught at a Catholic school in Michigan. When I moved back, not a problem. When I moved back to Pittsburgh, I could not teach in the Pittsburgh Catholic school because you had to have a letter from your parish priest. I was not Catholic. There was no public money going to the Catholic school, so I understood that. Now, if you are somebody who is not going to be allowed to get a job, certainly there would be ways to filter you out. Like, I am currently an atheist. Is a Christian school going to hire me as a social studies teacher, or is my tax dollars going to go to a school that would not consider hiring me based on my religion, which seems unconstitutional to me?
Interesting. Eric, I want to, or Fitz, Yitz, I want to get your thoughts on this because Dan raised this point a little bit about how that $1 billion going back into the state budget, he referred to it as a win for taxpayers. You made the point that unclear what lawmakers would decide to do with that. And one of the points Cleta seems to be raising is, you know, why should her tax dollars go to help fund a school that might not want to hire her for different reasons? What are your thoughts about all of that?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, hiring practices are defer from school to school, and they have all kinds of different reasons for hiring people with different credentials, or maybe they want that person to share the same faith that they are trying to teach their kids. Ultimately, our view is if parents want a specific school and that school reacts to the parental demand, we support that choice.
Okay. Thank you, Cleta. We appreciate your call and your comment. We're going to take a quick break. We'll continue our conversation. And later in the program, we'll discuss why some neighborhoods are more vulnerable to climate change than others. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Ohio's school voucher program. My guests are School Choice Ohio President Yitz Frank and Cleveland Heights University Heights Board of Education member Dan Heintz. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Dan, just real quickly, that call we got right before the break was about hiring practices. You're a member of a public school board of education. Are there very different hiring requirements for public schools versus private schools?
You know, public schools operate for everyone, and private schools don't. You know, and as we talk about school choice, the real choice, the only real choice that is on the plate is the choice of the private school providers. Private schools get to choose who gets in and who doesn't. They get public schools are open to every child. Private schools look at race, religion, family income, whether a child is disabled or a great athlete, and then they decide who they let in and who they don't. The same thing really goes with staff. You know, in public schools, the record of every teacher is a matter of public information. How much those teachers get paid is a matter of public information. community members can file Freedom of Information Act requests to find out just about anything. Our budgets are a matter of the public record. None of these things exist when it goes to the $1 billion the taxpayers are sending to private schools. They exist entirely outside of the public domain, even with this massive influx of public dollars.
I want to ask you this question, Dan, because I've heard a lot of supporters of school choice say in the past that, you know, parents should be in charge of their children's education. They should get to decide where to send their kids. And these parents are paying taxes. They're taxpayers, too. How do you respond to that?
I come back to this thing that I said previously, which is it just doesn't exist in Ohio's Constitution. The legislature has circumvented the Constitution by creating a system that is now clearly and publicly unconstitutional. This is what we're fighting for. I will also remind people that the whole notion is a little absurd, because it's like saying that if my family didn't want to use our playgrounds, the public playgrounds, do we get a voucher to go to Kings Island or Cedar Point? No.
Yeah. It's what do you say to this argument that, you know, that Dan just made, that private schools don't have to take all students. They can turn away students or employees, I guess, for all kinds of reasons. And public schools have to educate all children. What do you say to that?
So obviously, it's a very complicated issue. But the reality is that, number one, private schools, at least in my experience, generally do not look at all those factors. They want to take as many kids as they feel they can serve. I would also point out that while it is true that the public education system globally does have to educate all students that come in, but many public schools themselves do not educate all students. There are many districts that will privately place special education students. There are magnet schools. Our whole school system in Ohio is based on lines that were drawn related to redlining, if you remember that from the early 20th century, that essentially correlate public school boundaries with what now is income. And so there's lots of inherently discriminatory practices that are built into our global public education system. And that's one of the reasons why we believe putting more power into the hands of parents, and especially in Ohio's system where we spend almost $16,000-$17,000 per student in a traditional public schools, and about $6,000 scholarships if they want to go to a private school, that's a good deal for taxpayers and a good deal for parents.
We have another caller on the line. Hi, Christina. Thanks for calling. If you could quickly tell us what your question is.
Well, I have a comment, if I may.
Sure.
I have been a public school teacher for 30 years. I'm in the schools every day. And just to piggyback on Yitz's comments, we take all students. In my school, we have students with IEPs, 504s, they're in wheelchairs, and it happens to be a magnet school also. We cannot turn any students away. So with all due respect, Yitz should come and visit the public schools in Cincinnati. Utah has already had their court strike down vouchers. It increases pressure on public schools to ask for levies. It is another form of increasing segregation, not only in Ohio, in Cincinnati, but also in our country. And public schools in Ohio have over 85% of the students, but we only get about 75% of the funding because it is so much more expensive to educate all of these students with special needs. Private schools can simply say, well, we don't have those services. I'm sorry. Perhaps another school can serve you.
I'm going to stop you there, Christina, just because we're running short on time in this segment. Yitz, would you like to respond to Christina's comments?
First of all, I'm glad to hear that about her school. I'm not going to name names of other schools that don't have that doesn't happen. But I will also say that Cincinnati Public Schools has a really, really good reputation. And so I'm glad to hear that. But I would also say that that experience is not the case all across the state. And ultimately, that's what the legislature has been trying to solve here.
We have another caller on the line, Dave. I'm just going to read your question. The question is, what percent of this private voucher money goes to religious schools? Dan, do you know what that percentage is?
It is routinely north of 90%.
Does that align with your figures, Yitz?
I really don't know. I can tell you the total number of students and dollar amounts. You'd have to sort of go through each individual school. So I just don't know offhand. I would trust Dan's numbers, though.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. Sorry, we're just running out of time. We appreciate your listening and your calling. Sorry about that. I want to ask you, Yitz, what's next with this case? Has an appeal already been filed for this?
I don't know if the appeal has been filed yet, but I think the Attorney General has announced that he will be appealing in short order. Short order in the legal system isn't necessarily what we think about it in the regular world. They take their time over there, and I imagine it will be many, many months, if not years, before we get a resolution here.
Yeah. Dan, you know, we've talked about how this case ultimately will probably end up with the Ohio Supreme Court. What kind of chances do you think your group has in front of the Supreme Court?
I'm very enthusiastic about our chances. You know, we've been in front of the courts twice at this point. When we initially filed the lawsuit, the other side, as we expected, filed motions to dismiss each one of the five claims. We were successful in fighting back all five claims. Now it's gone before Franklin County Judge Jayza Page, and we're very, as you can imagine, energized by the outcome of that case. We're taking the same case to the appeals court, where we expect exactly the same outcome, and we look forward to taking it to a very conservative Ohio court, because conservative judges care about one thing. They care about the words on the page of the Constitution. And we have five instances where the words on the page of the Constitution are being violated by our legislature. And this is going to be the, you know, the outcome. We are going to win. If we win one of our claims, then vouchers and $2 billion in the course of a biennial budget as it is now go back to the taxpayers, or at least are not being spent this way. We're very enthusiastic, and that's why our numbers of districts are going up. As I said, we've had 50 new districts sign on in 2025. We expect that to double by the end of 2025. That'll take us nearly half the districts in the state. There are folks who say that the state Supreme Court is now a political body. And if that's the case, I'm eager to get in front of a political body when they see that three quarters of Ohio's school districts are involved in this lawsuit, because I think that political bodies are going to have a hard time ignoring the will of 75% of voters.
It's, what do you think? Do you think the Ed Choice stands a good chance in front of the Ohio Supreme Court?
Well, on this, I am in agreement with Dan. We are also very enthusiastic about the Ohio Supreme Court. And I think that, just to Dan's point, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think that there are there's a very, very good legal case that the Constitution actually supports our claims. And we're very confident that ultimately, when this case gets to the Ohio Supreme Court, those judges will ultimately side with parents and will refuse to throw 150,000 students out of school. And I'm sure that they'll find ample precedent in their interpretation of the Ohio Constitution to do that.
We got an email from Scotty who writes, how difficult would it be to change the tax code and assign one public and one private program? Either of you have thoughts on that?
It would require a change to the state constitution, you know, which is sort of an idea that I think is floating around on both sides. Depending on how it comes down in the state Supreme Court. But it would be a massive change in how dollars are spent and how kids are educated.
Yitz, I know for now the Ed Choice program continues. What does that mean for families who are using these vouchers?
Yeah, and it really means that there's no change to the program. Judge Page, when she ruled, she stayed her ruling, which essentially means like, hey, we know the other side, our side meaning, is going to appeal. And, you know, there's a chance that we'll win. So she elected to not disrupt that large number of students. And we are thankful for that. So they will continue as usual. And ultimately, I would assume that will be the case all the way up until the Ohio Supreme Court issues its ruling.
And Dan, just quickly, what does that mean for public schools and their students that continues as usual?
It means that public schools are going to have to continue going to voters for levies more and more often, which is exactly the basis of the DeRolf cases being found unconstitutional 30 years ago, that Ohio relies too much on local property taxes, which hurts taxpayers.
Well, I have been talking with School Choice Ohio President Yitz Frank and Cleveland Heights University Heights Board of Education member Dan Hines. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this important conversation.
Happy to be here with you both.
And thanks for having us.
Up next, we'll hear why some tri-state communities are more vulnerable to climate change than others. This is Cincinnati Edition.